The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay. Well, I think we'll get started. I just checked with Dean Jaffe, and I had a phone call a little earlier today from Professor Alai, who said she had a family emergency that she was going to have to run to, and she hoped she was going to get back. And I just checked with him about 10 minutes ago. He said she was going to be back. And will join us. And my name is Rick Wilson. I direct the International Human Rights Law Clinic and have taught the first year elective in other years on international law in the United States in the past couple of years. And I think what we've done in general on talking about advising folks interested in international law is kind of divided between the classic categories of public and private international law, which is the way it would be categorized if you were studying it in Europe. And it may be the way that one of your teachers may have approached it in terms of talking to you about it. Most of the general introductory courses in international law tend to have a heavy focus on public. So you're looking at institutions like the UN and general principles of international law, some human rights law, and I would put human rights law in that category of public international law, humanitarian law, all the kinds of things that involve governments in one way or another. And private international law tends to be the sphere of corporate law and such, and international business transactions, trade and such. That's what Professor Alai does. So she's, when she gets here, she'll talk a little bit about that. And mostly, I think I want to see if I can answer questions about what you might be interested in doing and give you a little bit of a sense from having done this now for 20 years with the Human Rights Clinic, what my own sense is about what's a good trajectory to think about in terms of your planning your studies here to head in the direction of work in the public international law sphere. I think a couple of years ago I wouldn't have said or wouldn't have recommended necessarily thinking about either government work or NGO work. And here she is now.
I did make it.
Everything okay?
Everything's okay.
Good. I was just getting started and just sort of setting out the scheme of things. Yeah, I guess it's podcasting.
It's podcasting.
That's what I'm told.
Uh-oh.
That's what I said.
So we cannot.
That's what I said.
We cannot give you any private advice.
No.
I'm sure there's an off button.
It's all public. That's okay. I think that my own sense of the sort of trajectory of getting yourself ready to do practice in the public international sphere probably means thinking about working either in an NGO, working in government, and I think government jobs are quite fascinating. I think, and particularly these days, I think working in the State Department or working in the international branches of some of the offices, that there's some little jewels of offices, I think, that are very interesting to work in the immigration area, in areas like the prosecution of the old office that did prosecution of Nazi war criminals and now has expanded its mandate to include the prosecution of international crimes, that I think are terrific places that also have to do with the Justice Department offices on the gathering of international evidence and the exchange of data under mutual legal assistance treaties, for example, I think are also fascinating areas to work in, a little bit more document-focused, but I think also
crucial to law enforcement and those kinds of things, and some of you may be interested in those directions. So I would guess, though, that if you're like the students who I end up seeing in the clinic in your third year, you oftentimes come to law school motivated by a desire to help people work in the field of human rights, do good in the world, and try to make a difference working in human rights cases. The sad fact is that I think the careers in human rights haven't caught up with the momentum towards human rights in interest in the world in human rights as a field. I think it is catching up apace. I think there are many more opportunities today for all of you once you get out of law school in the NGO communities, and particularly around specialized areas of practice that some of you have very kind of boutique areas. And I've noticed a big upsurge in interest in trafficking and issues like that. Women's issues, I think, have always been a sort of staple of the work we do, and I think women have been, and more women than men in the room today, women have been a sort of mainstay in the human rights clinic for years, and have women have been a lot of our clients in that work. So issues involving trafficking, domestic violence, family issues oftentimes dominate, even though they may be sort of associated with the private sphere. They are definitely part of public international law today. I've also seen, just by way of introduction, over time, the blending of the fields of strict, sort of broad international law, the kinds of things that those of you who have had that course, I think we had, maybe not quite half of the folks here have had or are taking the elective in international law, so it's a little bit different crowd, that you've had a broad introduction to the structures, mechanisms, sources of international law, and you're well prepared, you have your base already to go into spin-off or specialized fields. And the fields of human rights, humanitarian law, the law of war, and international criminal law are increasingly crossing over with each other, so that you're seeing lots and lots of the case decisions in these areas blending with each other, one source citing the other source, institutions citing institutions. So a UN committee will cite to the work of the ICTY, the International Criminal Tribunal for Yugoslavia, or vice versa. So you see a lot more of that synergy between those fields than we've ever seen before. What does it mean in terms of jobs? I think our summer program in The Hague, anybody going to The Hague this summer? Couple? Okay. That's a great place to start. I think The Hague is a place where lots of international law happens, and we've certainly had some folks who have participated in that program and then been able to leverage it into a subsequent job, working at one of the tribunals or working in The Hague in one way or another with international legal institutions. But in terms of the sort of curricular direction that you go, I think the dilemma that we've constantly identified for all of you, and you have your list of courses, is the embarrassment of riches. It's always the, how do I figure out how to sort out from the many offerings we have, as opposed to the folks who I visited in Maine a couple weeks ago or out at Arizona, where they have one course in international law, maybe. We have a dozen or more, 20. I don't know how many we have in international law in a given year. But
80,
I think
60.
Yeah, I think some people say 60, and so then it's a question of how do you decide between those competing areas. And I guess I would say to those of you who haven't done the elective in international law, to start with the basics. I think the broad survey course in public international law is certainly a base for both private and public international law. I think some teachers do a little bit more to introduce some themes in private international law. But as I said before, that course is mostly a survey of public international law, at least what we would think of as public international law. And to the extent it looks at institutions, it's going to look at the UN and the International Court of Justice and some of the other institutions that are affiliated with the enforcement of law that is all a sort of public function, and not the private bodies that get involved in commercial issues that Professor Eli is going to talk about. So I guess I would say start with that base, get the introduction course out of the way, and then I would probably build on that with a basic course in human rights, a basic course in humanitarian law, a basic course in international criminal law, all of which are offered at one time or another, and I think it really just depends on when and how it fits into your schedule as to whether or not you start there or build on what you have already. Most of those courses don't have prerequisites, and so the teacher is probably going to start with the assumption that anybody who comes into the course may not have had a lot of international law background, so you may spend a couple of weeks at the beginning of a semester going through basic things like what is a treaty and what's custom and those kinds of things, and then get yourself into the doctrinal areas, because we'd like to keep the courses generally open. But I think you can see in the course catalog that this gives you a comprehensive sense of the courses, but these sheets are where the action is, because this is what's offered in the next semester. So this is what's in theory available. This is what's actually available. So I think you can look at this, but I think you do need to do a little research. If you see a course in here that says, this is the reason I came to this law school, you need to find out who's teaching it, when it's offered, when's it going to be offered next, is the person going to be on sabbatical? I'm going to be on sabbatical next year for the year. Everybody who's in tenured or tenure track position is going to be in that situation. So you're going to have people who are gone potentially for some part of your time here. And I think candidly, picking the teacher is as important as picking the course.
That's true.
So I think, and I think all of you know that. I mean, I certainly felt like that when I was in law school. I wanted to check out who is teaching it, and do they have a good reputation? Are they going to be, you know, how are they going to be as teachers, and how do they approach the subject? So I would start with those basics. I would also suggest that we have this range of potential options. People doing other study abroad programs this summer, like Turkey or
Chile.
A bunch of people doing Chile. Great programs. I think both of those programs are terrific ways to get yourself one step deeper into the fields that you're interested in working in, and do it in a context in which you're hearing from different voices than you would hear here, because you're hearing sequentially speakers from the local systems who talk about, and this is true for all of our summer courses, they're not taught by us, they're taught by folks who know these systems and give you a good exposure to them, with a little bit of a mix of public and private, as I was delineating those when we started talking. Certainly that's true in Chile, it's true in, well, with The Hague, it's that combination of international criminal law and terrorism, a course on terrorism, which is sort of a mishmash of theories that is still kind of getting sorted out, but a lot of criminal law and a lot of humanitarian law and human rights law mixed in with it. It's really as much about how do we prosecute terrorists and how do we guarantee fair trials in an atmosphere that tends to be fairly hostile to the terrorist, right? Not surprisingly. So those are some of the themes that come through there. As far as clinic goes, and I anticipating the question that oftentimes comes up about clinic, I don't know how many of you applied for clinic or what kind of luck you had. We had a huge number of third years apply for clinic this year, so we didn't even come close to dipping down into the rising second years for the human rights clinic, even though you were eligible for it, for those of you who may have applied for that clinic. I very much encourage you to apply in your second year for your third year if human rights is an area that you're interested in. Clinically, there are also many other clinics that do things that have to do with international subjects, even though the only one that has international in the title is the human rights clinic. But the domestic violence clinic, for example, does VAWA petitions involving immigrant women that has, I think, a sort of strong human rights tone to it. And I think we have a lot of interaction with them and have done trainings with students in the fall around issues involving the Violence Against Women Act and how to deal with victims of violence and trauma, dealing in general, I think, with folks who have survived trauma is a common theme in a lot of the clinical programs, and you would see that there. Intellectual property has a big chunk of focus on international law. They oftentimes dip into international themes. And this year we did a collaboration with the Disability Law Clinic on folks in detention facilities, immigrants in detention with mental disabilities, which is a particular population deeply affected by the immigration system and involuntary drugging and such that goes on without much scrutiny and certainly without much care. And so we collaborated on a project at the Inter-American Human Rights Commission with them. And all of those are opportunities. I would say I tend to think about legal education now in terms of what would I have wanted if I were a student in your shoes. And I think about the training not only with regard to the doctrine, because I think the doctrine is interesting, but I also am very interested in the style of how you learn, and not just sitting passively listening to somebody like me go blah 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 for hours on end, which is what happens in a lecture class, and then having one test at the end of the semester that measures all of your ability to recall this in traumatic circumstances, which is unlike anything that you will do when you're in law practice. Seems a little strange to me, but it is the way that law school works for the most part, except for the courses that give you an opportunity to do skills development. So those of you who are interested in working with people, I very strongly recommend that you think about courses that give you a chance to develop skills dimensions and think about externships, think about courses that give you a chance to try on skills. So as much as you may feel averse to things like trial practice, or you may, I think probably more than anything else, the students who come into clinic identify public speaking as an aversion that they have, that they're not comfortable standing up and speaking on their feet. And I think that's something that you overcome by trying it on. So I encourage you to do those things where you get to try these on. Now, trial practice is one iteration of that. There are also courses on interviewing, counseling, negotiation, mediation. You'll see these sprinkled through the curriculum, and they all give you a chance to do the things. And some of the teachers, I think, approach their subjects. Some in this room approach the subjects that they teach. By doing case studies, doing practical kinds of things, so that you get your hands dirty doing the kinds of things that lawyers who practice in the field do. And a lot of our folks who teach it in the private international law area do that, and Professor Eli will talk about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think I would think about building with those skills courses or an externship in your second year and a clinic in your third year, And I think that gives you a terrific resume for going out into the world and saying, you know, what do we say? We prepare students to practice law. And it's true. And I think that's one of the great things about this school. We do our best to get you ready to practice law so that you're not just walking in the door and saying, what does a complaint look like? What am I doing next when I walk in the door? So we try to replicate those experiences for you while you're here. As far as sorting out that long menu of course options, I think you'd probably do better than I couldn't begin to suggest what each of you may need or want with those kinds of things. I'm happy to have conversations about it. I don't know how much time we have. Are you already in pre-registration, or you're very close to it?
Tomorrow
you're starting, right? So it's we can have a little chat, but in terms of picking between the subjects, I think my sense is that students are very astute about talking to each other and figuring out, you know, what's in the menu, what are the best options. Think about building blocks, and think about building skills as well as building doctrinal knowledge. Because I think for many places that you would work, government or NGO world, those folks are going to be as interested in knowing what you know about how to practice law as they are about how to think like a lawyer, right? The classic sort of doctrinal approaches. So I'll stop there, and you can talk
yeah,
a little bit
I mean,
about
I think one of the
private.
Things, thank you. One of the things I want to distinguish is, you know, we need to think about international law, transnational law, comparative law. You know, when you think about international law, we tend to think, of course, we don't know. That's $1 trillion question. What is international law? You know, it's treaties, yes, but then it's like, you know, customary international law. One thinks about public international law. That's a small portion of really what you do. So in kind of thinking about it, a lot of this menu is not about international law per se. It's really about American law, for example, that has extraterritorial application, transnational law, right? You've got comparative law, comparative tax, comparative constitution, Chinese law, Islamic law, now we have Jewish law. So there's a lot of stuff like that. And all of it is important. So it's what we call it all the international sort of thing, but it's you have to think about it. It's very different. And in private area, private business transactions, clearly a lot of it is not at the level of international law. So you're not studying international law. A lot of times your clients are just foreign people, foreign companies who happen to do business in the United States. The law firms say we do international law, but that's just because of a foreign client. Now, there's a special issues that arise. Of course, most interestingly is if it presents interest going abroad. And in that case, there's international law concerns, but there's also domestic law concerns. There's also all sorts of what now we're calling soft law, which is things that have sort of developed by multinational or international organizations, which have like anti-corruption initiatives and things like that, which are issued corporate social responsibility codes. I mean, things that are not law per se. So it's really about global. I mean, it's a very complicated world we live in. So it's not, when I went to law school 20 years ago, I don't think it was international law. Again, you know, even at Harvard had very few courses that were, they were not that, you know, you didn't talk about all those issues. So it would be wrong for you to say I'm just interested in international law. Now, to this extent, I agree with Rick that the international law course is a basic course. But if you guys, some of you are really not interested in practicing public international, maybe the comparative law course is the course to take, the one course to take. If you want to learn about different ways of looking at legal systems and laws, I don't think you should. I don't think none of you are going to take only one class. But I am sometimes thinking, if I have a student that says, I don't want to do international stuff, but I just want one class, what would I tell him? Maybe not international. Mm-hmm. Maybe I would tell him to take comparative law. Maybe I would have them to look at, you know, maybe international business transactions, which is, you know, mainly contracts and how does it work across borders, and do a little bit of international. But for those of you who want to build on it, it's important to have that public international law background. Some of you may have it already in first year. Some of you may have had some background in undergraduate. but it's not the same as what you would learn in law school. You do end up something else to say about the summer programs. The summer programs have got an investment and trade and have got comparative law aspects. They are not a substitute for taking the courses here, at least not in the trade mm-hmm. area. Mm-hmm. But for example, the Chile program, you learn a lot from this regional arrangement from the Chilean perspective, but it doesn't, people ask me this all the time, does this mean that I don't have to take? I think it gives you a heads up when you do take International Trade Law 1, for example. The other advice I have is not to divide yourself into, I'm a human rights person and I'm a business person or I'm a trade person, because that's not how reality is. That's the way we do it for a curriculum. It's true. It's even somewhat in the world is reflected that way, because people look at things from a certain angle and certain way. So in order for you to be more successful, in even in your human rights work, and I always say this, you should see what the other side thinks, talks like, does. You know, even if it's in a classroom context, you'll get some hardcore business people in class and you can argue with them. That's what happens in my trade class. We always have one person saying, you know, but this trading system is not taking care of, you know, human health. They're letting these, you know, lead paint. And then somebody else is saying, but aren't you happy that you can have salmon 24, you know, hours a day, 7 days a week at $7 a pound? I mean, it's true. You can, if we didn't have this, no, it's true, farm raised, color added, but, you know, there are things that you take for granted. There are perspectives that are on the other side which you wouldn't get. And I don't think just taking classes and doing things with people who agree with you is the way to go. Sometimes you should be around people you disagree with. In my mind, just to sort of see what they are talking. You disagree with that? Right, there we go. That's why we hang out. Look, and I have been doing this now for 6 years. I don't know, for a long time. So it's really, it's very important, I think, for you to, of course, pursue your passion. I mean, do what you love. But also, don't, you know, get yourself too narrowly into this. I mean, there are certain basic things that, the basic courses on the business side are international trade law, which I teach, international business transactions. Those are the basic, you know, I would say, courses, and then the rest of them built from there on. The international trade law is primarily dealing with the World Trade Organization, multilateral trading system. Of course, I know trade has dipped. I'm thinking to find new things to teach. 9-10%. But we are creative. We have started a class this summer on comparative secure transactions, access to credit. That looks at, you know, we've got somebody from the World Bank coming, the access to credit that different countries are having problem with in Eastern Europe here. And I don't think you can be good in any one area without actually seeing what the other side does. I mean, I tell environmentalists, particularly human rights activists, that criticize the trading system, that the best way to criticize it is to know what it says, to read its decisions, so that you have some credibility, so you can speak that language. Because they tend to speak the language of comparative advantage and, you know, cross-price elasticity of demand. And they're not really complicated concepts. But if you don't know what they're talking about and you haven't read the cases, you might think, you know, they're saying something really profound. So these are the things that it's important to sort of get exposed to, and so you can sort of talk about them. And besides, we're living in, I was going to say, difficult, interesting. It's an unprecedented time in human history. I don't think I'm exaggerating. I used to say that, and people say that every time. But I'm beginning to hear most people agree with me on this one right now. So I think one of the things that's going to have to diminish is this distinction between what was, you know, the human rights and dealt with rights of people and the business sector. I mean, come on. This has been so far, we've been talking about, you know, if you pursue your own individual interest, everything is going to work out for everybody in the long run. It hasn't worked out that way. And I'm not sure Adam Smith meant it that way. If you actually read Adam Smith carefully, he says things like, well, so long as the laws of justice, capital J, is complied with, then I think X, Y, and Z. So, but that parenthetical is not usually, you know, there were natural law philosophers. They believed there were certain immutable laws that couldn't be tampered with. This is not the way we think of the world right now. So I think it's very important that you diversify and think broadly about things. we have, the program I have is the ones that only give it, you know, a big LLM program, one of the biggest in the country and one of the strongest. You have people here from, 60 different countries. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this, I only have the schedule that the LLMs can take here. You guys can take more than this, but these are more the international courses. It's a wonderful opportunity to hear them talk in class, you know, maybe with an accent, maybe a little bit difficult to understand, but still, it's the perspective of, you know, well, this is what's happening, this is the way we see things. And that, I think, is something that is going to be very useful to you. Nowadays, more and more people are looking for jobs overseas. And I'm sure that I'm not saying it's all about self-interest. It's about us understanding other things, but more and more, the connections you make, the contacts you make with these foreign lawyers that are here who are going to end up being in their country, practicing, running for politics, etc., is going to be valuable opportunities and a network for you guys to have. We have 7 specializations in international law. I'm not saying it's for you to, but by looking at those specializations and the courses, sometimes it are listed for the LLM programs, but you can understand, for example, what courses fit into what specializations for them. We have business, we have gender, so you can sort of organize your courses. It might be useful for your purposes as well.
What are all the categories?
We have gender. We have specialization in gender, in environmental law, in international organizations, in human rights, in business, in regional trade arrangements. It's trade. I don't mm-hmm. know why they... Claudia wanted to call it NAFTA, so we got it. Called it regional trade, but okay. It's still... intellectual property.
Mm-hmm. Those are pretty good... that's sort of a broad sense of categories of the major sweep of a lot of the areas of international law. I would guess, more than half of those folks are in commercial or...
A lot of them are in the business trade.
So those other areas oftentimes are sort of seen as boutique areas. Even human rights. Human rights is a very strong component of this school's reputation, but within the field, we're still... you could count on the fingers of both hands the number of NGOs in this country that do human rights work where you can be a lawyer and work with them at the national level. So that's a good listing.
Yeah, those are the reason we have so many courses is because these people come here to just specialize in this one area. So we do need to offer multitudes of courses in IP. And so it also is advantageous for you mm-hmm. because you see an international IP. And international business. So the strength of that program, I think, also enhances the offerings that you all have. So.
I appreciate your pointing out that fundamental distinction. I think the other thing that the one about the difference between international law and comparative law, mm-hmm. foreign law, and I think there are a lot of our courses that look at another legal system or a style of doing law, mm-hmm. like the civil law of the continent in mm-hmm. Europe is much different than the common law tradition that we're so used to, and we tend to structure the way we think about law around the way we see it, because you all get socialized so quickly into the common law vision of the way, because you use casebooks, and the continent doesn't do it that way. And so appreciating how France does it or Germany does it, I think, is an incredibly useful way to approach things.
And you also see it in your, if you take LLM classes, you see how confused they get.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's a very, very big challenge. One other fundamental thing, and that is almost none of the courses that are on our list of the recommended courses for international study are on the bar. It's just, the bar hasn't caught up. It hasn't caught up. I think we're headed toward a day when international law will be a required course on the bar, and failure to know it will be subject of sanction. But it isn't where you don't get your ticket until you show mastery of it. But it just shows you what the field is, even though thousands of lawyers make their livings in international law. So, and my view for a long time has been, and I think it was when you said follow your passion, mm-hmm. That made me think of this, that it is to do that when you are in school.
Yeah.
That I've been on the admissions committee, probably I looked at some of your files, I have no idea. Well, before you came into the school, everybody who is here, believe me, is smart. You are really smart. And you did well on those tests that ask you to make those, you know, do the kind of testing that go with the bar exam. Same kind of tests. So my advice is to take the courses that you love, mm-hmm. and if the option is between one of the courses you love and have a chance to take while you're here, and that bar prep course that you're worried that you have to take because it's going to be on the bar, with probably a couple of exceptions that I think are uniquely quirky and personal to me, mm-hmm. I would probably opt for the course I love, because you got 3 years to do this and so many choices and so many incredible options here. And I speak from experience to some extent, because after my first year of law school, I quit. I hated it. I hated it. And went into the Peace Corps, came back 3 years later, studied for 2 more years, and then took the bar. And many of the bar courses are courses that are your first year courses, right? I passed. You can do it. You can go away from it for a long time and come back and still get it and cram it into your head for the bar exam and be able to get through that exam.
Believe me, you won't remember it after.
Yeah, you won't remember. Nobody does. It's a rite of passage. It's not a test of your ability to practice law. It's a rite of passage.
This is the last time you have, for most of you, at least it was for me, to think about things and do things that are interesting, not because you have to do it to make a living.
Right.
Right?
And, it's true.
It's true. I mean, I'm happy I took legal history, for example, when I was in law school. And my favorite professor was my legal history professor. And Mort Horwitz was here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was so much fun to actually hear that. I don't have 20 years have gone by. I don't think about those things anymore. But it was a good opportunity to do those things. Also, I hate to end on this note. People tend to do better in classes they enjoy.
Sure.
So, and to the extent that grades do matter, unfortunately, in this market, they do increasingly matter. You should do things that take easy classes, but do something you will enjoy as well.
I would say that, you know, just to channel the voice of Danny Bradlow for a minute, who oftentimes joins us but is on leave this year, mm-hmm. his view is that those basic core courses for law practice, the ones I was talking about, but courses like evidence, just what's a provable thing
it's
that
hard.
You can introduce into court that's also is on the bar, are important. Are in fact prerequisites for clinic. Almost every clinic has evidence required because the student practice rule of a particular court says you have to have taken evidence to be able to enroll in the clinic. So we require it.
Evidence, business associations,
mm-hmm.
Tax, just because I think everybody should
those
take
would be
federal
my,
income tax.
Those would be three I would pick right off the top of my head. As the sort of, you know, big three that I would want to have beyond required courses that are bar courses, because I think it's really important to, as Padide said, to understand the structures of corporations, understand tax, the theory of taxation and what it's all about. And I thought I would loathe that course, and I loved it. It was it's very structured. It's got a code. It's all there.
Yeah. You're not going to learn it on your own as easily.
Yeah.
Evidence is not something you can cram by yourself as easily.
We've
and business association is the beginning of everything. So
yep.
even international work. So
yep.
it's a basic thing. Other courses, you know, are good. Securities regulations, UCC courses. Even if you do international, for those international business types, it's a good mm-hmm. building blocks for the international.
I think the bar examiners are slowly, and the designers of curricula are slowly sort of transforming their vision of the way things work so that they recognize this fundamental shift that you all are experiencing that says the law is globalized. Law has been for a long time, for quite a while, and moving towards a much more synergistic interaction at international comparative levels. And I think it's to believe that you can practice. I mean, I suppose some of you may go back to Iowa and just in practice right there in Ottumwa and enjoy your life and have a grand old time. But I'm guessing that if you're here and you're interested in international stuff, that there are lots and lots of opportunities. I think the networking idea is going to be what it is all about. And the options to find connections from your summer work and from your externships and from your clinical work.
And the LLM students.
Yep, and the LLM students.
They want to get to know you. You can get to know them.
Great connections.
I wanted to also just say one thing, which is sort of like advertising. We have a visiting professor in the fall. He's only here for one semester. His name is David Gantz, G-A-N-T-Z. He's from University of Arizona. He specializes in international trade, and he's a NAFTA panelist. Mm-hmm. So those of you who have a special interest in regional trading arrangement, especially with Latin America, he's going to teach the regional trading arrangements course. He's not going to be here again. So he's just here in the fall. So, and he's teaching also international trade law too, he doesn't have a prerequisite. He says having some trade or IP background is good, but if you'd want to take trade one with at the same time, I guess that would be fine. He teaches that as well. So just that. And I won't be here next spring, but we'll find somebody else to cover. You're both gone. Yeah, I'm going sabbatical next spring. But
y'all have questions? Yeah.
One of our professors warned us away from slow classes that are dragged down by LLMs. He was like, you know, your tolerance has been ramped up and you might end up feeling for a change. I sort of feel like, oh, you know, a chance to breathe, that would be awesome. are there courses, especially like if we end up having a lot of commanding courses like Evans and EA and God knows what else, are there courses that tend to be sort of slower paced?
I don't know what they mean by slow
yes,
courses. My course is half LLM, half JD. I don't think of it as a slow-paced course.
By a long shot,
yeah. And I don't think people would take it, do either. I think there may be some seminars that you mm-hmm. can take. I think seminars where you can write papers instead of having an exam. And I think that's true of any course, but some of them, where it may be you can maybe do things more at your own pace. But, you know, it's sort of like, we went to the doctor's office right now with my mom, and she's got a strong accent. And sort of like the person thinks, because she speaks slowly and she's got a strong accent, that she is hard of hearing. You know, they kept talking louder and slower.
Louder and slower.
And she's like, I'm going to go insane here. Quiet. And she cares about her privacy. She's like, I don't want a whole world to know what's wrong with me.
Don't
I'm talking
shouting.
To you. So I think, you know, people misperceive. I mean, people, LLM students, especially some of our students, depending where they come from, they might, first of all, they're very shy about it talking in class because that's just, the style is the teacher lectures, you sit back, okay? They do not challenge. They have accents. Sometimes you have to listen carefully to understand what they're saying. But that doesn't mean that they don't do very well on the final exam. I mean, sometimes you'll be surprised at the people who I didn't know how the person, you know, I didn't understand the thing the person said. But when it comes to the writing, so you can't really judge that. And besides, people culturally, different cultures have different approaches. For example, in certain cultures, they will always tell you that they don't know. That doesn't mean they don't know. But that's because it's presumptuous to say you know, or to be talking about knowing. Well, in this country, we are into self-promoting to some extent, and talking, especially in the legal profession. I mean, we're telling, we're sort of selling ourselves all the time. So there's a lot of this stuff that goes on, too. So when a faculty member asks someone, say, what do you know? The person may say, I don't know. Now, whether they really don't know or whether they're saying that at that point in time are two different issues. So you sort of have to pursue. But I think that probably paper courses is what the, is probably what they're talking about. Some faculty members grade LLMs and JDs differently. I don't. I think we have a huge difference. Some of our LLM students are, you know, depending again which legal tradition come, which country they come from. Some countries do not have, I would say, as good a law school as others do. Good, not so. They do work in certain handicaps. We try to diversify our pool, so we have people coming from Africa, Asia, to the extent that we can, Latin America, because we think there's merit in getting as many African lawyers here as possible. So there's all of that too. But it's the perception of the professors are also interesting because they have their own, you know, preconceived notion as to what a law student should be like. And of course, the students, foreign student, has a different vision of what a law student's role should be like.
I would guess the there are a lot of LLMs in the summer academy, the Human Rights Academy that we have, and some of you may do that. I've taught courses in the academy and had LLMs and JDs, and the courses that I teach outside of clinic, other than the first year elective, are oftentimes seminars that are going to sort of rotate and have maybe 15 students in a much more conversational style, and I think that's it's in the nature of the course, and I love having the voice of foreign students who add a perspective to that I think is unique, and I think if the atmosphere is right and everybody's supportive of each other, you really learn an incredible amount from these folks who are bringing their own wisdom from their own cultures and backgrounds that is fascinating. So I've had quite the opposite experience. And if because I'm hearing that slow is bad, sounds pretty good when you're a first year student, I would think. At least the opportunity to engage in the ideas and think a little bit more, read a little bit more deeply around one particular topic and immerse yourself in it. Great stuff.
So questions? We have 10 minutes, yeah.
As far as sequencing goes, once you've taken like international or comparative law, what's kind of, I looked at all the courses and I was afraid some of them look like you kind of need to have taken some other courses, not necessarily as required prereqs, but like it's kind of good to have a building block.
Right.
What's good to kind of move forward? What are some good, I'm guessing international trade law is probably a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What else is good?
International business transactions?
International business transactions.
International financial law and development finance. Although Danny Bradlow is not here next fall, but he's not going to be teaching it next year. But we do have somebody from the World Bank teaching it. But that's a general course.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the basic.
In the public area, those ones that I mentioned that are now interacting synergistically, they are all offered as separate topical offerings. So
international human rights.
Human rights.
Yeah.
Humanitarian law, international criminal law.
Yeah.
There are separate courses on each of those. And they're either in the summer program or as course offerings, and they're all pretty much basic, and everything else is a variation on a theme or a deeper look at it. If you see something like advanced human rights seminar or colloquium or something like that, it's usually with the assumption that you've done basic human rights and you're going to go into some subject in depth, and the teacher's going to be looking at cutting edge issues in a smaller number of issues in greater depth, with a paper probably.
There's also a course that's not here for next year, but it's comparative intellectual property, like a survey course, which is also fits into that.
Yeah, the comparative law stuff, I think you almost have to kind of pick and choose yourself about comparative law, because comparative law, the ones that Padide mentioned about
Chinese law,
Chinese law, Islamic law, those are all, they're just, they're a chunk of a different look at the way law organizes itself.
That's what you're interested in,
independent.
Right. Yeah. And each of those is kind of, it depends on your own particular geographic interest, background, whatever it is that you might want to do. Comparative law, though, is a great course, just an overview course for any of these, looking at any course beyond the first year. Did you have a question?
I was just wondering if you were debating between international business transactions and international trade one, after taking international in general, would you say one is more specific than the other? I mean,
no, international trade law is actually more general, and trade law one is more. Which one is more specific than IBT? They're different. International business transactions because Ken and I coordinate. There's no overlap. He teaches more a private to private thing. So it's international finance a little bit. It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that, right? So I would say it's a more survey course, a little bit of transfer of technology, a little bit of finance, a little bit of sales of goods, international sales of goods. But the trade course is more in depth. It only looks at the statute, World Trade Organization, and World Trade Organization. Mm-hmm. So especially if you have a human rights interest, public interest, the trade course is a quasi-public course between the public and private, while the other one is more purely private.
If you're interested in arbitration or positive dispute resolution on a more international time, is there a certain class that you should get exposed to? Because I'm thinking of international law right now, and we haven't really covered.
Yeah, you don't have time.
So you won't.
Is there a way to get a feel for it? Is that something that
Have you seen this offering we have in the summer? There is an arbitration.
There's an International Arbitration Academy.
Academy.
Which starts with nuts and bolts of international arbitration and all of that. But in the fall, we have International Commercial Arbitration. That's the basic course.
So you go with commercial, or isn't there also one that deals with more like sovereign states and...
There's one that Professor Cyrilal Pereira teaches. He's teaching it this semester, and that's wonderful. He's at MIGA.
Yeah.
But he used to be at ICSID, and he does teach. What is your interest in it? Is it more?
I just obviously don't have that much exposure to it. So
how does arbitration work?
Right.
In the fall, you don't have that other one. The one that you're talking about, I forget what it's called. Pereira teaches it.
Curriculum from the business one, but it's international litigation and arbitration, and there's one on international commercial arbitration.
International litigation and arbitration.
There's one on dispute resolution.
Who teaches international litigation and arbitration?
Yeah, I don't know if it's being when it's taught, but this is just a course overall.
Do you know who teaches it? No, you don't.
It doesn't say.
No, this doesn't say. It's just the curriculum from the law and business program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the. I added all of those.
Yep.
That's the one David Steiner did. Yeah. We added all of it. You have to go with what's offered. International commercial arbitration, I think, is basic, but it's commercial arbitration. There's one course that Pereira teaches, which talks about state responsibility and all of that, which is offered in the spring. You want to take only one of them?
I don't know. I just wanted to start somewhere.
See what it looks like.
You know what I would do? I would check out the teachers.
And this summer academy, although I think the summer academy may be targeting
practitioners
more than students.
Yeah.
But it also may be certainly a way to find out how to do it.
Everybody's gone.
Yeah.
Don't let from
the classes.
Yeah, apparently.
I actually have a question.
Yes.
For next fall, and I didn't take the international elective this semester.
International, that's fine.
So
you can take international trade.
I'm actually taking international commercial arbitration because I have to take it for my own report position.
Mm-hmm.
But if I wanted to take either comparative or international trade or international business.
Yeah, no problem.
Which one do you think is...
No, I say take international trade, of course. That's a no-brainer.
I think they're all. I mean, any one of those. I think are. You know, they're all. You just heard.
Comparative law is, of course, good. I mean, it depends upon. And Nicola is a great, great teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So is Ken Anderson for IBT. But. Mm-hmm.
And Fernanda's back this coming fall, right?
Yeah.
She's teaching comparative law, isn't there?
Comparative law is more academic. It's less.
It's on your choices, I think.
And he said comparative law.
Yeah, it is. I'm just, because I have no.
What I would do is I would show up for class, the one that's going to try him on, and you'll get the sense of the styles and different. But it's very, very different.
And what they're going to cover.
If you are going to go, I mean, they're all basic. Those are the three basic courses. I would definitely take international trade and international business transactions if you're interested in the private.
Right, in private stuff.
Yeah.
And comparative, you know, useful for any of that stuff. So it's one of those building block courses.
Okay.
So comparative, you could take it possibly, foreseeably, although I don't know if Nicola's going to teach it. Probably could teach it in your third year, no?
You're going to, I mean, I think you're probably going to find, too, that you may have some scheduling issues about trying to schedule all three, but no. So I mean, you may have to look at that.
He doesn't want to take all three. He just wants to take one of them.
Yeah, take one of them. Yeah. I know.
So,
yes,
so see which one fits into your schedule.
Thanks.
Sure.
I'm in the JDMA program.
Yeah. In the SIS?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so what I worry about is looking at some of their courses and looking at I understand they're different, but they have the same title. So I'm taking international law with foreign liquor right now. I obviously wouldn't take international law there.
I would.
I'm sure it's somewhat different. So I guess I'm worried about making the best of it. Do you have any suggestions?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think, Paul does the counseling for that particular program, so he can certainly give you some suggestions if you want to talk to him specifically about options of what to take up there. My own students, several students usually in the Human Rights Clinic are in the dual degree program, and they tend to opt for the policy international relations courses, right? Or the peace building courses, those kinds of courses that are offered there, rather than a sort of doctrinal course that is more that you're going to want to look at from the legal end rather than the policy end, which is how they're going to approach it.
I mean, if you think you're going to be practicing international trade, for example, you would take it in the law school.
Right.
Because you won't read the practice of it. It would be very, very different. That's going to be policy.
Total
but I
policy.
I wouldn't take an advanced trade class here that's more policy-oriented, plus take something
right.
there, because it's both going to be discussion of policy. You may feel that there's some things, but you're not getting the value added that you want. I would try to take the more legal,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to say that,
yeah, no,
courses
that's true.
Here.
And the policy course is there. I mean, I think that's the reason that I don't know how easy it is to distinguish the two, but I think you can probably get a sense.
There was no hand up.
Oh, we didn't do any.
We didn't do any hand up.
Yeah, okay. No hand up. We were just talking. We were just holding, waving things around.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
So that's my suggestion. But if there's any specific course that you want advice on, I'll be happy to.
I'm planning on taking...